It is 5 o'clock. How are you doing? That's all that matters. How are you doing? It is March 9th, 2021, Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. It's good to be with you. It doesn't feel that long ago that I was with you. To be honest, the time flies, doesn't it, when you're having fun? James Dellingpole, the broadcaster and journalist, will join me at some stage during this programme. Lots to talk about, as usual. BBG Richie is the Twitter handle.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, James Dellingpole. Spoke with James sometime before Christmas. I enjoyed it. I've invited him back on again. He'll be with me. He presents the Delling Pod, which you can find on YouTube and on other podcast providers. Whoever provides you with your podcast will give you the Delling Pod. Good guy, bright guy. Lots to talk about with him. Hour two or thereabouts. Before that, you and I will have a chat. You and me. It's just you and me. There's nobody else here, just you and me. We'll have a good old chat, and I will read your tweets out as I go along, so do participate. Participate. All right? Doesn't kill you to participate. Get involved. RichieAllen.co.uk, my website, is the place to catch up with previous episodes of the programme and to read some articles. I do post articles there daily, more or less. Some of them you'll agree with, others you'll think are pretty ridiculous. No harm in that. Do get involved and share your thoughts and opinions on the site as well. All right then, what is there to talk about? What is there to talk about? I don't mean to be mean-spirited. I don't have a mean-spirited bone in my body. I sometimes go a bit too far. Sometimes I'm a bit brash, and maybe that lends to being a bit inconsiderate, but I don't have a bad bone in my body. But will somebody tell Charlotte Charles that Anne Sekulas is never coming back to the UK fecking ever? She's never coming back, love. She was on Sky News again this morning, was Harry Dunn's mum, appealing to the UK government, the US administration, and Anne Sekulas herself to come over here and face justice. It is a recurring thing. At least once a month, the lady, God love her, and I do have sympathy and empathy with her grief, but every month, appealing to Anne Sekulas, she's not coming over, love. Never. Never in a million years is that dopey bastard that drove on the wrong side of the road and killed your son who was minding his own business on his motorcycle and killed him because she's a twat with a capital T. She's never coming over here. Charged with death by dangerous driving before pissing off to the US, citing diplomatic immunity. She's not coming back. I've great sympathy for the woman, the mum, but hang it up. Apparently Sekulas said, I'll do community service, she said. And the family is not having any of that. No chance she'll come back. Remember last year, was it that incredibly bizarre scene? Was it last year or was it late 2019 when Donald Trump brought Harry Dunn's parents to the Shite House? Remember, on the pretense that he was going to meet them and hear their appeal. But Donald had sequestered Anne Sekulas in the next room, unbeknownst to Harry Dunn's parents. Donald thought that he was, well, that he was still a black.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
The unexpected hits you between the eyes.
You thought you'd come here tonight to meet the President of the United States. But tonight, in the next room, Anne Sekulas.
And of course the parents said, no, we don't want to meet her under these circumstances. Look, if she'd murdered him deliberately, I'd be with her. Get the bitch back to the UK at the speed of light. Did I say that out loud? Did I? I did. But anyway. Harry and Meghan, eh? Are you sick of that shit show now? Her daddy was on Good Morning Britain this morning, saying that the royal family are not racist. They're not racist, he said. And referring to Harry, Thomas Markle said, well, I've never played naked pool or dressed like Hitler. Good man yourself, Thomas. A combination of the two is to be recommended, in my opinion. Dress in an SS uniform,
get absolutely shit-faced, stick a bit of hot chocolate on the stereo, whip your cacks off and dive into the pool. That's the thing to do. Bit of a kerfuffle in the Good Morning Britain studio today. Piers Morgan, wanker, walked off his own programme because the weatherman was dressing him down over the treatment of the Duchess of Sussex. Apparently, they were friends at one time, and then she started or stopped responding to his text messages. This is fun. Have a listen.
They have had an overwhelming amount of negative press. You know, I watched the programme yesterday, and yes, they had some great press around the wedding, but what press is going to trash someone's special day? There was bad press around the engagement, before the engagement, and everything that has followed since has been incredibly damaging, quite clearly to Meghan's mental health and also to Harry. And I hear Piers say that, you know, William has gone through the same thing, but do you know what? Siblings experience tragedy in their life, and one will be absolutely fine and brush it off, and the other will not be able to deal with it so strongly. And that's clearly what has happened with Prince Harry in this situation. He walked behind his mother's coffin at a tender, tender age in front of the globe.
He did.
That is going to shape a young boy for the rest of his life. So I think that we need to all take a step back. And I understand that you don't like Meghan Markle. You've made it so clear a number of times on this programme. A number of times. And I understand that you've got a personal relationship with Meghan Markle, or had one, and she cut you off. She's entitled to cut you off if she wants to. Has she said anything about you since she cut you off? I don't think she has, but yet you continue to trash her.
OK, I'm done with this.
No, no, no.
Sorry, no. Sorry.
Do you know what? That's pathetic.
You can trash me, maybe, not my
no,
own
No,
show.
No, no.
See you later.
I'm being...
Sorry, can't
this
do this.
This is absolutely diabolical behaviour.
I'm
sorry, but Piers spouts off.
Yeah, he pissed off his own programme. That was a great opportunity for the bosses of GMB, who presumably despise Morgan, like everybody else, to fire the... I'm not going to swear again. At least not now, anyway. At least not now, anyway. Walked off his own programme, did Morgan. Harry's father was asked about how all of this affected him today, but James is doing the gardens for £4,000 a year at his mother's flat somewhere in Surrey. James is the major, so there you are. Yeah, yeah. All right, we'll leave that one alone. That one we've... If you dried that one out, you could fertilise, well, Buckingham Palace with it. Number of you saying distraction. Of course it is. These people don't matter. None of it matters. What's more important, of course, is what we're going to be talking about for the rest of the programme. But it's good fun at times. He did come back on later, did Piers Morgan, on his own programme. Blanket coverage of this arse candy on the mainstream media today. Arse candy. Nonsense it is. Royal family. I'm not going to say anything about the royal family. Not that anything I haven't said before. It is 8 minutes past five. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live from Salford. You're here. Thank God. Thank God for you. Thank God for me. Thank God for Dodgy. This is good enough. Live from Salford. The BBG, not the BBC. It's good enough for me. Now, the pandemic isn't over. It hasn't even begun, apparently. We're not even at the beginning of the end of the end of the beginning with the pandemic. All right, that was Dodgy and good enough. Chris Whitty, Jesus, Mary and Holy Saint Joseph. He's the Chief Medical Officer for England, was speaking to the Commons Science and Technology Select Committee this morning. And he said, ooh, that's what he said. It's exactly what he said, actually. Watch it back. He went, ooh, I'm not sure now about opening up, ooh. Things can go bad very quickly. A lot of you great unwashed out there, you might think it's all over, but I would encourage you to look at how things are going in Europe, in France and in Poland, where they're having lockdown after lockdown after lockdown. Yes, it's easy to forget how quickly things can go pear-shaped if you don't keep an eye on them, said Chris Whitty, who looks like something that Dante dreamed up. Have you seen him? Have you looked at him? Whitty told the committee this morning that the country's vaccination programme is very successful, but the vaccines are not 100% successful.
some people will forever remain vulnerable and could still die of coronavirus. On the great reopening to come, Chris Whitty had this to say to the Common Science and Technology Select Committee. Don't miss a word of it.
The first and most important principle that the models demonstrate is if you open up too fast, a lot more people die. A lot more people die. So the main point, I would say, of the modelling is to demonstrate the really profound difference between opening up too quickly, which leads to very large numbers of deaths, and opening up more slowly in a steady way, in the way that Sir Patrick was describing early on and is laid out in the roadmap, which doesn't lead to no deaths. And I think it is really important that we do not give any impression that what we're expecting is this just goes away and there's no further deaths. That is not realistic.
Yes, not realistic. Now, I've written about this today for you on richieallen.co.uk. Save this next bit and share it with your friends because every word of it is true. No conjecture here now. This is fact, and facts trump feelings every day of the week and 17 times on Sunday morning. Facts trump feelings. Every single word of it is true. NHS hospitals were no busier this winter than last winter. Now remember, last winter we did not have coronavirus. Okay? 1920. I'm talking about November, December of 2019, January, February of 2020. There was no coronavirus. This winter just gone, that we're just emerging from, NHS hospitals were no busier. Bed occupancy was not higher. This is the most damning statistic of all. It's a fact. And this morning, the government, all of this true now, announced that the Nightingale hospitals will be closed in April, the second time they have been closed, basically unused. The facilities have been empty, as you know, since the onset of the scamdemic. Most of them never saw a single blinking patient. Fact, not conjecture. Fact. Right? Right. They're using one or two of them now as vaccination centres, ironically. So Whitty and his Sage colleagues are claiming time and time and time again that flu and other traditional respiratory illnesses have disappeared in the last 12 months. They just upped and vanished and disappeared into the ether as soon as coronavirus well emerged. Yes, hallelujah. Flu is gone. He said this again today. We might hear him say it in a moment. Flu upped and vanished. This virus hasn't killed anywhere near the 120,000 they would have you believe it killed. Again, not conjecture, fact. People up and down the country are coming out of the woodwork demanding that their family members get justice and that the certificate of death that says COVID is torn to shreds and thrown into the fire and that the real cause of death is assigned to their bereaved, to their loved ones. That's a fact. More and more are coming forward and contacting the Daily Mail and the Telegraph saying, my granddad, my mum, my grandaunt was given a COVID death cert. She didn't die of coronavirus. Nonsense. And this morning, Chris Whitty is warning about third waves. Ooh. And more lockdowns and never-ending vaccines. And this committee of MPs, this Common Select Committee, there wasn't a pair of ovaries or a pair of testiclae amongst them to call out this crap. So Gabriel Scally, this Irish dickhead that we hear from regularly, this epidemiologist at the Royal Society of Medicine, another goon, he's thrilled at the very slow opening of society. He never wants to open up society again. And he wants to turn schools into borstals. Listen to him.
Well, I'm delighted that for once there is a cautious approach being taken. This old thing about it being either public health or the economy is entirely wrong. And I'm glad sense is prevailing. The only time you can have a healthy economy is you've got a healthy population. And coming out of lockdown should be a slow process. And there is no one right way to do it. But I think what is really important is that we do all the other things, right, that we're meant to be doing. For example, if we're bringing all the schools back, as we have done in England from Monday, we should really be putting plenty of measures in place to make the ventilation better in those schools, to get them more space so they can spread out classes. We should be doing mask wearing in schools. All of that preventive stuff needs to be done before we move on in this stage. And also, at the back of it all, we really still need a very good testing and tracing, isolating, supporting system, because we, one way or another, we're going to get more outbreaks and more flare-ups of this dangerous virus as we go along, and we need to be in a better position. And I think, unfortunately, certainly for England, the NHS test and trace system isn't up to scratch, it isn't up to international standards, and it's failed us so far. So there is more work to be done.
Plenty of work to be done. Plenty of work to be done. Now, Aish Degi, Cunis, Colini, August Bukali, Cunis. Back to Chris Whitty appearing before the Commons Select Committee this morning. He was asked, this is very important stuff now, so please listen. Listen now, stop looking out the window. Listen carefully. Whitty was asked about the risk society would accept in future regarding coronavirus and the variants, right? What sort of risk will society be prepared to accept in the future? What things might we be prepared to do and so on? He's responding, incidentally, to a question from the MP Carol Monaghan. She's chatting him up. Listen to this.
The idea we're going to get zero deaths from this is unlikely, to the point of not really be worth considering as a policy option. There are going to be deaths from this. There's no doubt about this, unfortunately. The question about how much society is prepared to take as a kind of to reduce that risk is actually a societal question, and therefore a decision for ministers and parliament, and in the devolved authorities and nations, obviously, for their ministers and parliament. And the reason for saying that is, just take the example of flu in a different way, which is not comparing the death rate. This year, we have had almost no deaths from flu. Flu has virtually disappeared because flu has got a lower rate of transmission than COVID. So if you get COVID right down, flu goes away. Now, would we want to go forward in a situation where we say, right, now we know how to deal with flu, we're going to have every winter is going to be like this winter, and then we'll get no flu deaths? That's a societal question. That's a choice, essentially. And that is a choice for society as a whole, reflected through ministers and parliament.
Yeah, this is very dangerous stuff, this. Firstly, as we know, flu didn't disappear. That's a nonsense. They lumped flu in with coronavirus. That is even if coronavirus actually exists. But back to what he said, he's putting it out there. The question, will society be prepared to isolate, shut down, lock down in winters to come, to beat viruses? Listen again.
Flu has got a lower rate of transmission than COVID. So if you get COVID right down, flu goes away. Now, would we want to go forward in a situation where we say, right, now we know how to deal with flu, we're going to have every winter is going to be like this winter, and then we'll get no flu deaths? That's a societal question. That's a choice, essentially. And that is a choice for society as a whole, reflected through ministers and parliament.
Yeah. And that's something you can share with your sceptical friends. Whitty is putting it out there, and these discussions are being had at the stage meetings, I'm sure, cabinet meetings. Will we be able to usher in, will we be able to convince the plebs, the great unwashed, as I call them already, as they call us, in the future to adopt these measures, to accept lockdowns, partial lockdowns maybe, mask wearing, distancing, all of that jazz, because we know that flu kills a lot of people in the winter. We know that respiratory infections do ordinarily. So now that we know that these lockdowns are getting rid of flu, maybe we ought to keep them and look at these measures as a way of preventing death and saving old people and keeping granny alive a bit longer going forward. Tell us a bit more. He goes on to talk a bit more about it.
So, you know, I don't think this is a situation where a doctor like me or a scientist like Patrick and me, Dr. Patrick's also a doctor, should be saying this is what it should be. I think what we should say is these are the possibilities, here are the upsides, here are the downsides. And remembering that there are significant downsides from a health perspective, leaving aside anything else, to things like lockdowns and all the things that are going on. So these are not, even if you just take a health perspective, there are risks and benefits on both sides of the equation. And obviously, when you lead to wider societal issues, societal choices, seeing family, economy, there are other factors to bring into account as well. These are very difficult things to balance off. And this seems to me very, very much, excuse me, a societal question.
Yeah, I think when you're lying as much as Whitty is lying there, I think that's the inevitable coughing fit is what happens, right? So he says, yeah, lockdowns have economical and health consequences and not seeing family, but these are societal choices. Madman, right? His mate Statler, or Patrick Vallance to his pals, he's been warning that masks and distancing might be here with us for many winters to come. Carol Monaghan, then, the MP, she pings in with a question.
Given that it's up to ministers and wider society to decide what this acceptable risk is, have you been given any indication of what sort of level this is?
Well, I think at this stage, the clear indication is that everybody thinks that the risk from COVID is far too high. And that's the reason people in all four nations are taking the decisions they're taking at the moment. The question about how far down the slope we can go, and then towards the end where it's discretionary, what are the things that people wish to do as society to push it even further down? That we haven't really got to that point, I think, in the decision-making process for any of the four nations at the moment. I think the one thing I would, though, be very much cautioned against is people thinking that we can go to a zero COVID approach. I completely agree with Sir Patrick's point on this. That is not a realistic goal. If by zero, you actually mean zero. Now, some people are reinterpreting zero to mean very low. Very low, yes, we absolutely are all wanting to go to very, very low. But very low and zero are, to me as a scientist, two rather different things.
Got to watch that one carefully. Yeah, low. We wanted to get down real low. We accept that we'll never get zero COVID. You might take some comfort from that, but don't. Because again, he's asking the question, what are we prepared to do as a society to get these numbers down really low in the autumns and winters and springs to come? They're evil incarnate, these people. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but they are evil incarnate. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show for Tuesday, the 9th of March, 2021. Back with plenty more after this. Bye. That is Soul Asylum on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is, just in case you've got something to do, 29 minutes past 5. James Dellingpole will be my guest in around about a half an hour's time. I like James. Different worldviews and all of that. What? But I like him. Like the cut of his jib, whatever the hell that means. James will be with me, and I know you're kind of excited about that. I said I'd read some tweets, and then I just didn't. So let me read some now. I think Liz Jones tweeted me earlier that she was given the hook, the call to go and have her jab. Where are you, Liz? Where are you? And Liz, I think, said, it's scheduled for 5 o'clock next Monday. I have a date with the BBG, says Liz. Or something along those lines. So I'll be saying no. Now, of course, we know that... Well, I know because I know Liz from Twitter. I know that Liz is avoiding the jab for far more serious reasons than listening to this baldy bastard and his garbage. Yes, Liz. I'm expecting the hook anytime soon. Me with my asthma, which I have under control 99% of the year. But I'm expecting sometime in the next few weeks now to get a hook, as it were. Linda says, how you doing, Linda? The writing has been on the wall for ages, Richie, which is why they keep on priming us with the winter is coming meme all those years. A la Game of Thrones, says Linda. Revelation of the method. Our old friend Jim Mars, who I loved. I loved him, I can't put it into words. Jim would have said yes, a bit of predictive programming there. Long dark winter ahead and all of that. Yes, the Night's Watch. What? Indeed. Gary says, Richie, the one I always hear
is that the hospitals weren't higher than previous years because of the measures put in place. There's always a ready-made propaganda reply. People have been spoon-fed. Good point, Gary. When I point out that the hospitals, in terms of bed occupancy, lower this year than last year. Yes, of course, they say, well, that's because you washed your hands and because you wore the masks and all of that. But they're a bunch of hypocritical bastards, Gary, because in the same breath, they tell you, don't they? They tell you that cases are going up and hospitalizations are on the rise. And we say, why? And they say, because you're not sticking to the measures. They can't have their cake and eat it. You can't do that. What? Lovely. I'm not going to say what again. Hi to somebody who sent me a tweet by somebody who's a proper idiot, so I'm not going to read that out. I'm not going to read a tweet out from somebody who claimed that Matt Hancock would be arrested and put on trial. Somebody said that about 4 months ago. Some goon in the Truth or Industrial Complex. I can't be reading that stuff out. It's just rubbish. All right. Hi to Ewan Cooper. I think Chris Whitty needs to be renamed I Talk Pish Whitty. Good man. Hi, Jason. Jason says, winter lockdowns more likely. Cover to protect the grid from brownouts through moving to 100% renewables. Some of my friends talk about these things to me. They think brownouts, on the horizon in the near future, maybe. Hi to Charlie Stevenson. How you doing, Charlie? How are the youngsters getting on going back to school, Charlie? Do tell me, my friend. He says, the rubber is really starting to hit the road with the new normal, isn't it, Richie? Terrifying. I cannot believe the supine population is just accepting this bollocks. I can believe it, Charlie. I really can believe it. I see it every day and I don't get upset anymore. I just accept it. I'm resigned to it. Is what I am. Hi to John Gouge. How you doing, John? Apparently Ofcom, which regulates broadcasters in the UK. Ofcom is the abbreviation of the Official Communications Act. Ofcom. Apparently it's launched an investigation after 41,000 people complained about Piers Morgan for things that he said about the Duke and Duchess's interview with Oprah. So Morgan is coming under the microscope there from Ofcom. Hi to Scottish John in Austin in Texas. Thanks, mate. I'll retweet that there. Hi to Seb. How you doing, Seb? Who says, Richie, worldwide, we need a thorough examination and an autopsy of every single death that has been attributed to coronavirus 19. Good man. Seb, I agree. Hi to Mike, who says, Whitty has cheestical eyes. Or chastical eyes, don't you know? He's full of bollocks. I think I've been educated. I've not heard or come across the term chastical or chesticle. Chesticle, is it? Chastical? I don't know what's going on. Hi to Andrew James. Hi to Ron, who says, Richie, we've got 450 plus MPs, and the sound of their voices saying this is all wrong is deafening. How can that many people be this sick, says Ron. Good man, Ron. Thank you for your tweet, pal. Thank you all for your tweets. Thank you. Good night. I'm not going anywhere for a while. Did you see this on the website last night? I got it from a website, a European news website. Did you see it? I won't dwell on it. At 25 to 6, I won't dwell on it. But there's a Dutch television programme which features 10 to 12-year-old children being filmed asking naked adults questions about their bodies. Did you see that? There is a story, a scale on the Richie Allen website, richieallen.co.uk. Do check it out. I won't dwell on that. Rather sinister though, isn't it? Who comes up with that idea? Let's get 10-year-olds, sit them down, get strangers to walk into a room, whip off their clothes, present themselves in birthday suit. Who comes up with that? Not good, is it? Love this, by the way. Spiro Skouras, my pal, sent me this, a story about the governor of South Dakota. Every time I hear South Dakota in a sentence, I think of one of my favourite scenes ever from the series The Naked Gun. I love this. Frank Drebin, Lieutenant Frank Drebin, and his boxing expertise.
We found his wallet on the curb outside the Institute. We haven't yet had a chance to examine it thoroughly. It just came down from the lab an hour ago.
Hector Savage from Detroit. Hey, I remember this pug. Ex-boxer. His real name was Joey Chicago.
Oh, yeah. He fought under the name of Kid Minneapolis.
Hey, I saw Kid Minneapolis fight once in Cincinnati.
No, you're thinking of Kid New York. He fought out of Philly.
He was killed in the ring in Houston by Tex Colorado. You know, the Arizona assassin.
Yeah, from Dakota. I don't remember if it was north or south.
North. South Dakota was his brother from West Virginia.
You sure know your boxing?
Well, all I know is never bet on the white guy.
Never bet on the white guy. Not bad at all. Hi to Ray. How you doing, Ray? Thanks for your poem, pal. I'm going to retweet the first bit of it, Ray, so people can read it. But I can't read it, Ray, because I'd be here all day long. But thanks for sending me a poem anyway. Charlie got back to me. My daughter, 9, is enjoying being back at school, says Charlie. No issues. She says some of her friends are wearing the chin straps. My boy is 12. He's back at secondary schools. A lot of parents have refused. Thank God he's doing okay. He's not on his own. Thanks, Charlie. Remember your call, pal, when you told me about that, and you echoed the concerns, I think, of many parents of secondary school children. I'm glad that he's okay, and I'm glad that he's not alone in not wearing the silly face nappy. Good man. Hi to John the Spinner. How you doing, John? Thank you for the kind words about the show. If you ever call Salford a dump again, John, we'll find you. We will find you, and we will leave you where we found you. Don't diss Salford. We love Salford. 23 minutes to 6 o'clock. God damn it. Let's move right on then. Yes, South Dakota and Spiro. I love this. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. Is it Noem? N-O-E-M. Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem. I'll say Noem, you say Neem. Kristi Noem says she will sign a bill that limits girls' sports at public schools in the state to biological females. Yes. Hitting back against Joe Biden, creepy Joe, because Joe wants to open girls' competitions to transgender girls. Of course he does. It was a very early executive order by creepy Joe. The new rule in South Dakota will require parents there to give a signed statement every year vouching for the biological sex of their children who want to participate in sports. I love this. Every year, you've got to write a note to the school. Dear head teacher, how you doing? I can assure you 100% that Amy is a biological female. And if she wants to take part in the fucking javelin throwing, she should be allowed to. Warm regards, Richie Allen. Love that. I love it. Every year. No tranny kids. I'm going to say tranny about 500 times in the next 5 minutes because Stonewall want the term tranny to be given the same status as the ugly word, well, the N-word. And they want tranny to be obliterated from the dictionary. Tranny. That's right, tranny. Tranny, 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 tranny. Okay. Now, South Dakota isn't alone. The Mississippi governor said the same thing. He would sign a bill banning transgender girls from competing on girls' or women's sports teams. First two states, Mississippi and South Dakota, become the first two states in the nation to set policy on this issue. Good stuff. Women's Day was marked by Kristi Noem yesterday saying, I'm defending women's sports. Good girl yourself. And this was on the BBC. Jess Glynn, the singer, has apologised for using an unacceptable transphobic slur in an interview. The slur is tranny. Tranny, 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 tranny. The singer was on Mo Gilligan's podcast. He's a comic. And she told a story about visiting a transgender strip club. The punchline of the story was about somebody feeling a bit uncomfortable around people inside the venue. Here's the clip of Jess Glynn on Mo Gilligan's podcast.
We're going to keep going. We're going to this other bit. This is probably the funniest bit. We got to the end of our, like, trail or whatever. It was like a tranny, like, strip club thing, like, and he's this bad man, like, what is this? And there was just like men, just as it was amazing, and we were like, woo, with our wigs. Yeah. He was like stood in the corner, like, oh my days.
Oh my days. Wow. The bitch. Transphobe. Well, she wrote a letter on Instagram that went on for miles and miles. Longest apology letter I've ever seen. It went on forever. First of all, I'm not going to read all of it. First of all, I want to address my appearance on the Mo Gilligan podcast when a story I told caused massive and righteous offence. Firstly, I want to say that I am wholeheartedly sorry. I know that in this case, sorry is not nearly enough. Throughout my life, I have made a lot of mistakes, and what I have come to know is that the only benefit to making one is to learn from it. And she went on and on and on and on in a grovelling apology to transgender women, most of whom I'm glad to report, because I know quite a few, wouldn't take offence at all. Because most of the transgender women I've been, and I mean this, been lucky enough to encounter through this programme, and transsexual women, have no time for this Stonewall bullshit. She apologised anyway for saying tranny. Tranny, 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 tranny. Viral clip in the US of A. Have you seen this? Have you heard this? Have you seen it? It's a video, but I've only got the audio because this is radio. A woman is in her car and she pulls up to the drive-through. Not sure which one it is, if it's Wendy's or Jack in the Box or McDonald's. She pulls up anyway in her car, remember? She's in her car, remember? And the guy says at the drive-through, I cannot serve you unless you wear a mask. Cue stupid motherfucker.
Hi.
You have a mask?
No, I don't.
I can give you one.
You can give me one?
I can give you one. I need you to wear a mask.
So you can hand me a mask?
I can hand you one, yeah.
But you can't hand me the drink without a mask?
You've got to wear a mask.
How does that make any sense?
I just need you to wear a mask. Do you mind?
Well, if you can hand me a mask, why can't you just hand me the drink?
I can hand you the mask.
She laughs then. If you can hand me a mask, why can't you just hand me the drink?
What kind of fuckery is this?
You see, I bet you the kid in the drive-thru working there's probably all right. Probably okay, that kid. You know, it's probably a regular kid, you know. Working him a minimum wage job. He's probably a good lad. But Jesus wept, eh? Eh? I can't serve you unless you put a mask on, but I'm in my car. Unbelievable. 17 minutes to 6. Nigel Farage is leaving the party Reform UK. He's out and has decided his next venture will be to take on the woke and their evil wokeness. That's the new gig for Nigel. Here he is with Julia Hartley Brewer, recorded this morning on Talk Radio's Julia Hartley Brewer Show. This is an extended clip. Gives me a chance to have a wee drink. Okay.
Well, it's very difficult to fight elections on this issue because you can point out what is going wrong in our primary schools, our secondary schools, our universities. And then come the election, Boris Johnson will say, oh, it's all nonsense. We won't let this sort of thing go on. And the Daily Mail say, isn't he wonderful? You know, my previous battles have been much clearer. You know, I want to leave the European Union. The Labour and Conservative parties wanted to remain members of it. So I don't think making that an electoral issue is very easy. But what I do want to do, and I will use social media and mainstream media to do this, what I do want is for parents of children going through our primary and secondary education to stand up to the hijacking of the agenda by the extreme left. There are little examples, such as the name of Winston Churchill now being damned and schools dropping his name from, you know, houses within the schools. But there's much more serious stuff than that going on.
Well, that's
on.
It. A lot of people say, oh, look, this stuff doesn't matter. And yet the rewriting of our history, our culture, the idea that, I mean, again, this has come a lot from America, this idea that America was founded on slavery and on racism. That's sort of integral to every aspect of American institutions. Even if that were the case, which I don't believe it is, it's certainly not the case for this country. But this idea that everything that happened up to, well, gosh, almost 10 minutes ago, was wrong, racist, sexist, transphobic, any it or is you can think of, and trying to rewrite history, whether it's our comedies, whether it's our history, whether it's our pop songs or our children's books, everything is, it's almost like we're moving to sort of year zero Mao territory, where nothing that happened before last year is allowed to stand.
Well, this is Trotskyism, isn't it? You know, the whole object of Trotsky for years and years and years was to rubbish not just the Tsar, but absolutely everything that Russia stood for, to lead to a revolution, to bring down the established order. And let's be in no doubt that what is behind much of this is a new Marxist Trotskyite type agenda. They want us to hate our country, to hate its history, to hate everything we've ever stood for. And when that happens, the glorious communist revolution will come. The problem is, whilst they're a small minority, because of cancel culture and political correctness, too few people have got the courage to stand up to this stuff. I get emails, Julia, every single day from people who are teachers, people who are police officers, people who work in the civil service, you know, being told, telling me that they're virtually being told to be ashamed of the fact they're white, and yet none of them will come on your programme because they all fear losing their jobs.
We hear quite a bit. We hear a bit of that on this programme as well. Unilever, a giant in the beauty products industry, announced today, I did post about this on richieallen.co.uk, it announced that it's going to remove the word normal from its line of products around Dove and around Vaseline. Vaseline. Yeah, so it's going to remove normal because that might annoy a lot of women. But the thing is, Farage, if he got anything right there, and you might think he got everything right, but one thing he did get right is it's a tiny minority. Corporations now can be persuaded by a tiny, tiny, tiny minority of people to make massive decisions about their product lines, but not just about their product lines, about their employees. Astonishing. You know, you see stories all the time about somebody getting promoted to a gig within a business. And then somebody else says, you just promoted Mary there, didn't you? You made Mary your chief operating officer. Ah, did you? We found a tweet from Mary. We found a tweet from Mary from back in 2011 when she called somebody a tranny. And five or six more people might pile in. Only five or six. And you'll see companies make decisions based on that. And say, tell you what now, we better send Mary back down to the shop floor for a while. It's crazy stuff, isn't it? And it's not about things. Well, look, I'll leave it there because we're going to be covering this extensively, I think, going forward. There you are, there's a bloody, there's corporate speak for you going forward. Richard Tice then, Nigel Farage's pal, the founder of the Reform Party, was on the same show with Julia Hartley Brewer. And he was talking about lockdowns and his concern about lockdowns, and he's concerned that they're never going to go away. Richard Tice.
The battle lines are drawn for the months and, heaven forbid, the years ahead. You know, with these lockdowns, these authoritarian controls. I mean, the idea that senior scientists and medical advisors are already suggesting that we're going to go into lockdown next winter. It just shows, you know, the challenges that we've got. It feels to me, Julia, that there's two key things that those of us who recognise the massive collateral damage that lockdowns do, we've got two clear objectives. Firstly, we've got to make sure that the debate is around the NHS has to be prepared for the next, whatever it is, big crisis. And the way to do that is you've got to say, you've got to have sufficient contingency. So we actually believe that the Nightingale hospitals, which, you know, they opened, they closed, they opened them again, they've closed them again, they should always be on some form of standby, and that the NHS, rather like the TA with the army, should have a reserve force of medics, doctors, nurses, medics, who are there on a retainer, get some online CPD training, maybe once a week go in, so they're there to be called up, literally, if there's an emergency. Yep. That's the first thing. So the NHS has a contingency plan. The second thing is, we've got to make the debate and the argument over the next few months very clearly that the damage of lockdown in terms of mental health, in terms of, you know, loss of other lives, in terms of jobs, is so great that we must never, ever contemplate it again.
Nobody's listening, Richard, Dickie boy. Nobody's listening. Nobody is listening to that. The government doesn't care, nor does the scientists advising the government. They do not care. These people know. This is how evil this is. They know that locking down is possibly hundreds of times more devastating to people's health than any virus. They know this. It's not about a virus. It never was. It never will be. It's about transforming healthcare. It's about imposing upon people Orwellianism, a dystopian existence. That's what it's always been about. The virus, whatever it is, if it exists, if it doesn't, I don't know, is the excuse for everything that's happening and everything to come. And as far as the health thing goes, I've talked about this extensively. Extensively. You will have heard on this programme, won't you? This woman, June Raine. This June Raine, who heads up the MHRA, which is the UK's medicinal regulatory body. That fecker has gone on the record as saying that in future there'll be no treating of illnesses and ailments. We won't be treating people anymore. We're going to move away from doing that to a more preventative model of healthcare. That sounds benign and sounds lovely, doesn't it, when it's said like that? Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want something that prevents people from getting sick rather than waiting for them to get sick and then having to treat them? Yes, it sounds lovely. The word is benign, but it isn't benign. It's tyranny. It's vaccines for everything. Vaccines for obesity, vaccines for strep throat, vaccines for the flu, we already have those, vaccines for cancer, for everything. And tied into those vaccines are your rights, your right to travel, your right to meet people, your right to go to the boozer. That's where it's going. And alongside the vaccines for cancer and obesity and strep throat and God knows what else, will be a social credit model that watches everything you do. Had a bit too much to drink this week, did you? We're going to take 2 points off your social credit score. Not keeping fit, are you? Little bit overweight, are you? Are you? Well, we'll take a couple of points off. For the next few days, you're not going to be able to go to a pub or go to the cinema. Don't laugh at it. Don't laugh. We have already been conditioned to accept this type of punishment, of punitive measures for things that we have done wrong. How, you ask? Well, on Facebook, on Twitter, and on fucking YouTube. That's how we've been conditioned. You do something wrong, say something out of turn, your account is suspended for a week, for 2 weeks, or for a month. Whether it's Google, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Twitter. They're conditioning people. They're conditioning people to accept this. This future. You went to the doctor for your monthly checkup. You're a few pounds overweight. You're a dangerous bastard. You know what that means. You know the sort of pressure that can put on the NHS. Your fridge told us that you were drinking too much Pepsi. This is how it's going to be. So temporarily, we'll cut off your credit supply. All right, there won't be any cash. It'll be a new digital currency. Temporarily, you can't go anywhere. Only for a week, mind. Now learn your lesson. That's where it's all going. And that is not crazy conspiracy theory. This isn't InfoWars. This is the truth. It's crazy shit. And you got Richard Tice going, oh, we must never allow this again. And we've got to press on people that lockdowns do more harm than good. They fucking know, Richard. They know. It's not as if Chris Whitty doesn't know this. Or Patrick Vallance doesn't know this. They are horribly compromised, these people. I don't know how. I don't know what the motive, excuse me, the method of compromise is. It could be anything. It could be sex. It could be money. It could be corruption. I have no idea. But these fucking people know that what they are doing is tyrannical. They know it. But most of the UK, most of those who are, most of those who are slightly awake to the agenda are still covering themselves with the comfort blanket that these guys mean well, but they are making a mistake. And of course, that is a huge barrier to progress. A lot of people in this country know that what is happening is wrong, but they comfort themselves in telling themselves that these people are making a mistake. That's what it is. It's just bad science. No, no, admit to yourself what you've known all along. It isn't bad science. They know what they're doing. Destroying your livelihood, ruining the mental health of your children is a fucking deliberate agenda. It's not a mistake. You gotta wake up to it. Because if you don't, well, I don't know. No point in finishing that sentence. Here's Ocean Colour Scene. James Dellingpole will be with me in a few minutes' time. Ocean Colour Scene on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's exactly 6 o'clock, by the way. If you've just joined the programme, you're very welcome to it. James Dellingpole, the Delling Pod podcast creator himself, will be on the programme in a few minutes' time. You don't want to miss James. Great guy. Looking forward to speaking with him. Only had him on the one time. That was sometime in autumn last year. Lots to talk about with him, so do stay in touch with me via Twitter. You might have a comment to make. My Twitter handle is at @BBGRichie on Twitter. At @BBGRichie on Twitter. Back in a moment.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back. I put the microphone fader up there a little bit earlier than I should have, hence the cough. You all right, Jar? Thanks for the tweets. Neil Robson says, Richie, just listening to you there, YouTube banned me for criticising the police, including a few choice words. It's the second time I've been named, and I do pay the monthly premium, says Neil. They can get fecked now, says Neil. Look, I know it might be a little bit of a stretch, it might be a bit of a conspiracy theory, but I do believe that to pave the way for a society where we are punished, right? I don't mean locked up now. I don't mean locked up or have your door kicked down by goons in uniforms, although that may happen. But a society whereby you are punished by way of, well, next week now you can't take a train. We've seen this in China. Next week you won't be able to, well, go out and have, as I said, a meal or a coffee or whatever, because you've done something that is anti-societal, anti-social. I believe it. And I believe that they've prepared us for this by getting us addicted to your YouTube, your Twitter and all of that, whereby we've become accustomed now for years to understanding that saying the wrong thing can mean that you're basically banned. For a while, you know, banned for a week or for a day, 24 hours a week or 2 weeks or whatever. I think James is in the room. Just going to ask James if he's ready to go. If he's not, we'll take a tune. If he is, we'll get him on immediately. James Dellingpole. A lot of you excited about James. I know many of you check him out regularly on the Delling Pod, which is on YouTube, and all good podcast providers will have it as well. He's a writer. He's written for many newspapers over the years. I read him for many years in the Telegraph newspaper. And as I said, if you haven't done before, subscribe to the Delling Pod. He's old school, which is about the best thing you can be in 2021. He talks to everybody and anybody, and he creates the space for them to say what they want to say. He's a terrific interviewer. Let's welcome back to the programme James Dellingpole. Welcome back, James.
Richie, can you hear me okay?
Lovely. You sound great because you've got a really sexy microphone, James. You're coming through loud and clear.
I'm getting echo on my, which is really annoying.
Do you want us to disconnect and reconnect? It sometimes cleans it out for whatever. It's very old-fashioned, that. It does. Let's disconnect and reconnect. As in, I'll hang up and then we'll call you back again, or you call me. Let's try it again and see, is the echo still there? Failing that, we'll do it the old-fashioned way. Is that any better, James?
Yeah, that's good.
See, it sounds great my end. You sound like you're sitting in the same room as me. How have you been? You're in the wars on Twitter, taking on all comers.
Yeah. Oh, Richie, I am. It's weird. It's like, you know, I never meant to be this kind of lone hero. It's just that all my comrades deserted me and left me alone holding the line. It's been weird.
I can't believe a guy like you has used the term comrade, but I'm glad. Welcome to socialism, James. And of course, by socialism...
No, I was using it in the military sense, Richie, not that...
I know.
I haven't suddenly become a Marxist.
Well, I've never been a Marxist either, and neither was Simon Bolivar, right. Neither was Che Guevara, neither was Hugo Chavez. None of those guys were Marxists, you know, either, by the way.
Funnily enough, since we talk about that, I have found that how you define my politics has changed massively this year. I identify much more now with people on the left, or rather I see the point of people that previously I thought were just like, you know, a pain in the ass, like people like, you know, John Pilger, or look at Naomi Wolf. Naomi Wolf, who used to be an incredibly annoying person and is now fighting the fight for justice and freedom and everything else. And all the people that I thought were crazies, I mean, I'm not saying I'm going to start wearing turquoise like David Icke, but I mean, clearly that guy was onto something way before most of us were.
He was. Now, on the socialism... Listen, I've always believed that the real left, because this Marxist Trotskyist nonsense that we've seen from, you know, Momentum and Starmer, and even before that, Jeremy Corbyn and going back to Blair, none of that is real socialism. I've believed in my bones ever since I became political when I was younger that trade unionists and real old school socialists have far more in common with conservatives than either group was ever comfortable admitting. Of course, one of those issues was the free movement of workers, of migrant workers. Genuine trade unionists and genuine lefties like me, we don't have xenophobic bones in our body, no more than you have, James, but we knew the dangers of that, and you know, conservatives and conservative minded people knew the dangers of that, and yet we were, you know, constantly divided on other issues. Far more in common, I think, with the old school proper leftists and trade unionists than we ever cared to admit, but anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I agree, Richie, and what's more, I think the thing we have in common, apart from anything else, is we have values. We actually share many of the. I mean, the thing about the old left is that they have a. They love Britain like conservatives love Britain. They don't. They're not embarrassed about it, and they're not embarrassed about things like the importance of the family. I mean, they're quite sort of socially conservative, and that's in these times. I mean, social conservatism, I think, is becoming more and more important, because I think one of the problems we're experiencing in the world today is that we have a political class which has no values whatsoever. It has no conscience. It's got a kind of year zero approach to everything. It wants to remake the world anew, and that's always scary.
How have you come to terms with that? I was introducing you as somebody that I've read for years, at times shaking my head when I've read you and shaking my fist, which is brilliant. It's the job of any good writer. But other times nodding along going, yeah, fair play to you, you're right. It must be one hell of a shock for you, for people like Julia Hartley Brewer, for your friend Toby Young, to see this Conservative government wreck the economy, wreck people's futures, destroy the health of our children. I could be here all day long. How have you coped with that, James?
Richie, it has been insane. And I'll bet everyone listening to this show is thinking exactly the same thing. Every day you wake up gobsmacked at the craziness. And what's been particularly weird for me, of course, is that half these guys were my friends at university. I mean, I just happened to be at university with a particular generation which happened to end up running the country. And I'm thinking, hang on a second, these are the guys I used to get pissed with. You know, I used to, you know, try and get pissed, get laid in the same environments that they did. And yet these guys are now like a sort of lizard-headed race trying to destroy the world kind of thing. You know, I mean, it, it's almost like that. I don't get it. I really don't get it at all.
That because, was my next question. I mean, my next question was why. Sorry, James. Sorry to interrupt you. You just said there you don't get it. The obvious next question for any day one radio presenter is why? Why have these guys, whatever I might think about them and the schools they went to because of my own background, but that's neither here nor there either. It doesn't matter. How did these guys who went out and got pissed up and looked for a shag and were good old boys, yeah, how did they end up coming to do what they're doing now? How has that happened?
I think Let me tell you a story. My first friend from university to really hit the big time was a guy you may have heard of called Dave Cameron.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a brief period where the Conservative Party was looking in a mess. I mean, as it has done for years. I've been despairing of it as a natural conservative, what you might call, you know, somebody who believes in, well, I mean, I guess I was a Thatcherite, which is not necessarily the same as being a conservative. But I remember watching, I went to the hustings where Dave made, you know, long before he became party leader, there was a sort of runoff, you know, among various leaders. I think Dave Davis was another candidate. And I remember going to see Dave and make his little speech and thinking, yeah, wouldn't it be great if my university friend became prime minister. I mean, not long after that, I realized that he wasn't the vessel for my politics at all. He was going to be another squishy centrist sellout. But anyway, not long after that, Dave became leader of the party, and then he became prime minister. And what was fascinating was watching all my friends in politics, my friends in journalism, my friends in, you know, I suppose the sort of what you might call the establishment, adjusting their political positions, trimming their sails in order to accommodate themselves with the new regime. And I realized then that very, very few people have adamantine principles. Most people will just do whatever is necessary to be near the seat of power. So if it becomes fashionable suddenly to, I don't know, destroy the education system of children and blight their futures by forcing them to wear face masks all day and deny them chunks of their schooling, well, hey, why not? If that's the fashionable thing, people will do it and they won't object. If say, that the fashionable thing is closing down the country, destroying thousands of businesses, killing possibly millions of jobs, if that suddenly becomes kind of kosher, well, yeah, who are you to argue with it? I think, sadly, this is my wisdom of old age, this is what most people are like. Most people want to be with the in crowd. They want to be with the reigning hegemony, no matter how abhorrent its views are. I mean, you know, you and I grew up wondering how it was the Nazis rose to power, and yeah, and every generation of children pretty much in the last 20, 30 years has been taught nothing else at school but the rise of the Nazis. So you would have thought they'd sort of kind of worked out the deal by now.
Yeah.
And look, there was a country where people had been exposed to lashings of Goethe and Bach and Beethoven, you know, I mean, among the most civilized countries in the world, and still they fell for this regime, which killed, you know, 6 million Jews, which started a world war, which, you know, how do you explain that? People will just go along to get along. That's simply how it is.
Yeah, I remember being at Dachau many years ago, back in 2001, speaking to a very, very elderly German gentleman, and he basically parroted what you just said there about how it happened. James Dellingpole is our guest. The Delling Pod is where you can find James. Your podcast provider will have it. It's a really, really good podcast. And I'm not just saying that because he's here. I've been listening to it now for many years.
Of course you're not.
No, I have, honestly. And you can quiz me.
No, I believe you.
Yeah, you can quiz me.
In all honesty, it is a good podcast.
It's a very good
just
podcast.
Just as yours is a very good radio show.
Thank you very much. Now, I want to pick you up on something you said there about going along to get along and about, you know, empty, vacuous-minded politicians who are desperate to achieve a seat close to power and will adopt any popular position or opinion, whatever gets them closer. I go along with that. However, do we not have to accept now, I suppose, that, I mean, I accepted some years ago, I believed for many years that when men and women formed a government and formed a cabinet within government, they basically decided for the next few years how things went. But then I learned about think tanks and special interest groups. So on the one hand, we can say these guys will go along to get along and will take any popular, you know, position. But realistically, what we are coming to, I suppose, is the acceptance that ultimately governments are mere puppets in the hands of think tanks and lobbyists, which have far more power than they do. Right?
That's, well, I totally agree with your point there. We're talking, aren't we, really about what you might call the deep state.
Yeah.
There is this, and this is definitely the case with governments around the world, that there is the sort of the national governance, and then there is the supranational governance. And there are all sorts of influences that are brought to bear, ranging from the United Nations, which has far, far too much power, I think, too. You've got organizations like the European Union, under which we were, you know, until recently we were enslaved by it. And then you've got organizations like the World Economic Forum. But just briefly, but I'm intrigued by what you say about the think tanks, because I always thought, and I'd love to hear you correct me on this, I thought that think tanks were the job you did when you kind of couldn't make it in journalism.
Yeah.
you wanted to earn a bit more money than you would as a say an economics professor at a university. So you joined a think tank and you had a fairly good living sitting around in near Westminster, your nice offices, and you have long lunches and stuff. But I've been puzzled, and maybe you can explain this, why it is, for example, that a think tank I used to think was great, the Institute of Economic Affairs, I thought it was about free markets and promoting free markets. How come that a lot of people who work for it have gone full square behind the promoting lockdowns and vaccines and all this kind of stuff? What's that all about? Do you have an insight into that?
I have an insight, but it's only a theory. It's only an opinion. I certainly couldn't correct you because it's a theory. I thought think tanks were, as you described them beautifully. When I came up in radio, it was as a producer for a mid-morning talk show, and we would sometimes speak to these talking heads from various think tanks. But what I've come to understand is that they're not as benign, these think tanks, I can't even say it, as I once thought they were. And I think they are the vehicles, many of them, by which policies are delivered to governments by the deep state, the shadowy characters whose names we don't know, people working around the World Economic Forum, various banks, various banking cartels. That's what I've come to understand. You mentioned David Icke earlier on. David Icke wrote for many years about the what he called the round table organizations, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations, which is, again, supposedly a think tank. But he wrote for many years about how much more control, or how these organizations have far more of a reach into the heart of government than people think they have. So I think the power brokers pushing the Great Reset, I think they use think tanks by way of getting what they want to happen. Even things like the Bilderberg Group, which we've laughed at over the years, you know. And, you know, genuine anti-Semites, genuine haters of Jews will have used the Bilderberg to describe any number of agendas. But it's got nothing to do with Jews or Israel. It's a group of people that come together every year. And I've believed for some time that at the meeting of the Bilderberg Group, often things that are meant to happen or things that are wanted to happen are discussed and are kind of imposed on the attendees. And often the attendees of Bilderberg, they tend to be rising stars within the world of politics. James, I could be talking total bollocks now. It's just a theory I have.
No, what you say does make sense. And that point you make is well made about Bilderberg, that it used to be a kind of a sort of trope, you might say, of conspiracy theories. You know, what about the Bilderberg group? And no one knew what it got up to. But we have a similar problem with Davos. I mean, you know, every year we've seen footage of private jets flying out to Switzerland and then fleets of limos ferrying these billionaires to Davos to lecture millionaires on how ordinary people live. And we've kind of laughed at it, haven't we? You know, we just think this is just bollocks. There's no these people are just crazy.
On
they're
a jolly.
Completely out of touch.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and that's been going on since Klaus Schwab, the sinister Bond villain, who, I mean, that in itself is a reason not to take it seriously. You know, all he needs is a Persian cat to turn him into Blofeld. Yeah. He's got the accent, he's got everything, and so you're inclined to listen to their crazy schemes about remaking the world, taking them with a huge pinch of salt. It's only this year, this last 12 months, where suddenly their wish list has got a lot closer to fulfillment. And I think what they've been like is they're a bit like when you go fly fishing, and you know they've constantly been casting into the water, and nothing's bitten. But suddenly this year, or 2020, they found, you know, the way to get the fish to bite, and the way to get the fish to bite is to generate this supposed pandemic, and everyone's gone, oh my god, we're gonna die, we're all going to die, instead of going, hang on a second, what evidence is there for this thing being a unique killer? How can we be sure that it's you know, you're telling us that this is pretty much unprecedented in our lifetime, but I seem to recall from the history books that the Spanish flu, people were dying in droves, and they didn't need the government to tell them that it was a serious problem. They could look around and see their friends dying and knowing it was a serious problem. And yet somehow most of the populace has not applied any critical thinking. They've just listened to what Piers Morgan and the BBC and the government's propagandists have been telling them. You know, that if they looked at the evidence with their eyes, they would see people aren't dying in droves at all. But instead they go, no, but the BBC tells us people are dying in droves, so we must believe them. Some, you know, some random guy called Neil Ferguson that we've never seen before turns out to have anyone who looks at his track record realizes the guy's a charlatan. He's got, you know, a track record of failure going back to the foot and mouth outbreak of the early 2000s. Absolutely. You know, got it wrong there. Millions of animals were slaughtered needlessly because of his dodgy computer models. And here he is again, coming up with the computer models that justify this weird, draconian, business-destroying, civilization-destroying response. And everyone's going, yeah, well, it's really necessary. We must wear a mask at the supermarket. We must lock everyone under house arrest because reasons. That's the extraordinary difference between this. You know, I mean, ultimately, this does come from the World Economic Forum and from United Nations Agenda 2030, rather. This is what they've been wanting all along. They just never imagined till now they could achieve it so easily. We've just, as a civilization around the world, we've just rolled over and surrendered.
Yeah, I can't add to that. Listeners are tweeting in their droves to this. People can follow the tweets in their droves. A lot of people happy you're making the points you're making. It's a thing you've probably noticed this on your own excellent podcast, the Delling Pod. Folks, go looking for it if you haven't before. I'm sure you have heard of it. If you haven't, do check it out. You'll probably find people are bewildered. A lot of people are alive to what's happening. They're terrified because as they look around them, they see all of their neighbours and their friends acquiescing to it, capitulating to it. And they look to people like you, James, to tell them that they're not going insane. I mean, it's a public service, really,
for people.
It's true, isn't it? I mean, it's killing people, this.
I tell you what.
Ironically.
I was wondering, really, actually. I've been... I've, my wife tells me, and she's bloody right, as wives normally are, she says, you've got to write another book, because I haven't written a book in ages. And I keep thinking, the problem is the story moves so fast, it's quite kind of difficult knowing which book to write.
Yeah.
But one of the books I thought I'd kind of fancy writing, just because there's an element of escapism to leaven the sheer unadulterated misery, is how so many films, so many classic films, called this thing right. I mean, there are elements of one of my favorite conspiracy theories, Three Days of the Condor. Yeah. I just love that movie, where it turns out that there is, you know, within the CIA, there's an even more sort of secret branch of the CIA which is bent on evil. Well, you only have to look at contemporary America to see that this is exactly what's going on. Whoever wrote that screenplay must have known. But then you've got things like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That's probably the most common experience for everyone. This thing where you look around and yet another of your friends, even up to David, what's he called? Sutherland, Donald Sutherland, has been taken by the pod people and the pod creatures. Everyone's becoming a pod person. And it's absolutely extraordinary. I mean, there's also, of course, The Matrix. There's those of us who are red-pilled, who know exactly what's going on, and everyone else is living in blue-pilled world, either because they're stupid or because they are malleable or because they don't really want to face reality, because the reality is so terrifying. I can see why you'd want to bury your head in the ground. And I think that includes a lot of my mainstream media contemporaries. The people that I'd counted on to hold the line at Bastogne, to hold the defensive circle as the Germans surrounded us, but like we'd fight on, and they've all just buggered off, because I think they think that, well, to use a different analogy, they all want to stay within the Overton window. They only want to say what is acceptable to their employers. And so you've got conservative newspapers and journals which really ought to be fighting this stuff to the last round are instead going la la la, it's not happening, the economy is going to bounce back any second, and yeah, this is all normal, nothing to see here,
take the vaccine.
And yeah, take the vaccine. What's you know, I mean, there are so I think one of the reasons that I'm skeptical, that I was skeptical early on, is that I'd seen all this before. Because, you know, if you've researched the green movement, you've researched the great climate change scare, you realize it's being promoted by the same people. The climate change scare was the original scam they were going to use to achieve what they're now achieving with COVID-19. And, you know, Both things are equally specious in my book. I can't remember where I was going with this. What was I saying?
No, we were talking about the media and your...
Oh, that's it, yeah.
Absolutely, and why you're upset. And I mentioned the vaccine, because the media are saying now, you know, you have talk radio, which for quite a while was going very hard against the agenda. At least some of them were. And then, of course, YouTube or Google kicked them off for a bit. Before we go back to what you were talking about, climate change, because that's hugely important, and I was planning on coming to that anyway. Do you think that it's possible that Google's deleting, even if it was only for 24 hours, deleting talk radio, was that a little reminder? Listen, get back into line now and play ball with the agenda.
You might think that, Matty. I couldn't possibly say. Yeah, I mean, I think it's bleeding obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really. I mean, yeah, I suppose the thing I was going to say about the climate change thing, which is the same as the COVID-19 thing.
In terms of the end game, that's what you mean. In terms of the end game, that's what you were saying, yeah.
The thing that has always struck me about the whole climate change thing is that if you are a skeptical journalist, there is so much low-hanging fruit. I could write a story every single day. I could write several stories a day demonstrating that the climate change scare has been completely overblown. There is no evidence that the world is going to hell in a handcart because of man's selfishness and greed. You know, the Australian wildfire story was bollocks. The story about the polar bears is bollocks. The story about the sinking Pacific Islands is bollocks. The story about Bangladesh is bollocks. It's all total bollocks. And for any journalist worth the name, it's really easy. You could write these stories every day. It's the same with this COVID-19 thing. There are so many stories to write about the vaccine, for example, about the horror stories that are not being reported in the media but should be, about people reacting badly to these things, which aren't even vaccines, by the way. It's an experimental stuff that dicks around with your mRNA.
And we
haven't even got to, you know, people are, we know, for example, because a whistleblower told UK column this, that the Pfizer vaccine, for the first week, it sort of takes out your white cells. It basically renders you more vulnerable to every bug that's going around. And you can imagine if you're an old person in an old people's home and you suddenly get the jab. Well, if you catch flu, which hasn't disappeared, by the way, but despite what the sage experts tell us, it hasn't vanished. You know, you're going to get clobbered by it. And as for Israel, don't get me started on Israel. What's happening there, I think, is obscene.
With the green passport. Can you believe that? I mean, I saw a Jewish gentleman, I can't remember his name, a Jewish gentleman living in Manchester, tweeted when that green passport thing came in, he couldn't believe it. He said, Jewish folks, you know, as a Jew himself, what the hell is going on? Ira papieren bitte. What the hell, James?
Yeah, well, your Jewish friend put it very well. I do find it extraordinary. Again, this it's like cognitive dissonance, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure it's been all the same for us. The Holocaust is something that we've all been made very, very, very aware of in our lives, and it used to be quite a big deal. You know, it used to be something that we all thought of as a bad thing. But just recently, it's as if, like, nah, there are no lessons to be learned from the Holocaust at all. You know, it's fine. I mean, nothing wrong with Israel conducting this kind of Dr. Mengele-like experiment on its entire population.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have thought somebody would have gone, yeah, hang on a second. I think there's something a bit wrong about this. But nobody's talking about it.
No, well, they're embracing
it. What's that about?
I don't know. It's a strange one. I don't have too many friends in Israel because I'm no fan of the state of Israel itself, but that doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter today. Anyway, but yes,
no,
it staggers me.
Can I just make this point about Israel? I just thought... I did an amazing interview with somebody called Ilana Rachel Daniel about what it's like. She's a mother. She's horrified. She lives in Israel. She doesn't want to take the jab for very good reasons. And if you don't, you become a pariah. It's like, well, it's like you've refused to wear the yellow star, or I'm not sure what the exact analogy is, but it's something pretty horrible. And I was struck by one of the comments on the various places I put it, and somebody saying, I don't know how you could not understand this about the state of Israel. Israel has long been a fascist state. Look at their treatment of the Palestinians, blah, blah, blah. How can you say anything nice about Israel? And I was thinking, hello, your point is completely irrelevant here. It doesn't matter what you think about the Israeli government or about Israel's history or whatever. This is what's going on here is completely wrong. And that should be constant. That should be
on its own, yeah. Absolutely.
Where your rock is targeted, not about your hackneyed views on whatever.
I suppose the point he was making, even if it was ham-fisted, was that Israel's human rights record when it comes to the Palestinian people is questionable if you want to be kind to them. And if you're me, and this will come as no surprise to anybody listening to this, it's abhorrent. But I take your point 100% right. Right now, it doesn't matter. It's astonishing. It should be a huge lesson. Go on.
It's funny, though, isn't it, Richie, that I mean, darkly funny, that that the Palestinians have really benefited from this because they haven't rolled out the vaccine program in the Palestinian territories.
I know the irony.
And look at the comparative death figures. The Palestinians are not dying. What does that tell us, I wonder? I mean, when you've got this perfect, geographically contiguous population, so with the same climate and similar characteristics among the people, probably similar demographic, and yet, amazingly, the country that is taking the vaccine seems to be having more deaths than the country that isn't. Whoa.
Yeah, and as you said, isn't that spooky? It's very spooky. And as you said quite rightly, evidence is emerging from elsewhere that some of these vaccines are doing great harm. Hospitals in Germany, ambulance drivers in Germany, schools in northern Italy, even Treviso, I believe, incidents in the United States of America, and our media is deaf, dumb and blind. In fact, Sarah Gilbert, who largely responsible for the Oxford AstraZeneca jab, was able to go on Ian King's programme on Sky News yesterday and have basically a free ride, to talk about how efficacious and how safe the vaccine is, when it is obvious, and I say this as somebody who prides himself on his journalistic integrity, on never making a claim that I don't know to be true. So I can say, with hand on heart, the AstraZeneca jab is causing harm. It really is.
But it's interesting, Richie. I've been hearing, as I'm sure you have, I've been hearing lots and lots of anecdotal evidence that of people having really, really bad side effects, way, way worse than you would expect from a jab. You know, I mean, I've had the flu jab in the past, and I would have been very, very cross if I developed flu after getting the jab, because the whole point is not to get it, isn't it? You're told that it's a dead version of the flu. It's not going to give you the flu. But for example, a friend of mine, his mother and her group of friends, who are probably in their 80s, he calls them the coven. they've all had their first Oxford jab, i.e. the AstraZeneca one, and they're all so mightily pissed off they're not going to have the second one because they've had such bad reactions.
Wow.
And I know of somebody else who, in his late 60s, who was living the life of a 20-year-old, as you know, we can in this age, in this age where we tend to stay younger longer, don't we?
Yeah.
And he's gone from being a kind of hard drinking, hard shagging late 60-something into being this husk. He's collapsed. He's lost it. He's lost everything. And I mean, there are actually worse things than death, aren't there? To go from being hale and hearty to being a shriveled husk of your former self in a matter of days, and that being where you're probably going to be for the rest of your life, that's quite a blow, I would say.
I would have said
and
too.
And yet, this is not being talked about.
I know some senior citizens as well, and some of them are very able-bodied, and have said, "Look, my immune system has basically gotten me this far, and I'm doing well. So I don't necessarily think I need it." That's a very positive thing to hear. I'm reticent, and I'm sure you're reticent as well, you know, as a journalist, to say to anybody what they should or shouldn't do. I never do that. I avoided saying that like the plague.
But I do.
Yeah.
I do.
You would tell him straight up, James, would you? I don't know. It's a line I won't cross now, you know, because if anything happened to them then afterwards, after they didn't take the vaccine, if they got a virus and they got very ill, I'd feel terrible, to be honest. So I don't know what to do.
Oh, Richie, I think I'm further down the rabbit hole than you. I just think that I'm really, really upset. I'll tell you, this is a confession. My parents have taken the jab and neither of them wanted to. My dad took it because he's a fierce skeptic like me. He took it because he was bullied so many times by the local surgery, it was just sort of made clear to him that if he didn't, he'd just be isolated and ostracized. And my mum, I think, was again, you know, that generation, they're sort of they're in their 80s and they think to themselves, well, look, I would like a few more holidays before I pop off. Right. You know, while I've got all my marbles, I don't want my friends pointing at me at the golf club.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. There is so much peer pressure.
That's sickening, James. Can I just jump in there? Can I ask you this? Sorry to interrupt. This is very important. So your dad then a skeptic and your mum, obviously intelligent people, strong-minded people, individual people. They, and I totally sympathise with them now, they felt that by not having it, they might be precluded from taking holidays and going to the golf course.
Yes.
That's disgusting. Yeah. I mean, that's blackmail. That's the essence of blackmail, that.
Yes. But don't forget that this is, look, we're talking about a country where a lot of people aren't like us still. A lot of people still, particularly that generation, they still get their news from the mainstream media. They still think the BBC is a trustworthy source. They still get the Daily Mail and think the Daily Mail isn't pushing an agenda. You know, these are the institutions they've trusted all their lives, and they're not going to suddenly start going down the rabbit hole listening to the Richie Allen show or trawling around on I don't know on Telegram to find out the dark truth. I mean, my mum, for example, I think she'll have the TV on most of the time when she's in the house, you know, while she's cooking or doing housework or whatever. She'll be watching the golf if it's on, but if not, you know, she won't be able to avoid having BBC pushing its pro-vaccine, pro-hysteria, pro-terror agenda.
Yeah.
So it's very, very hard for these people to resist.
They have they'd be
pariahs.
Of course they would. Of course they would. James Dellingbull is our guest. We've got James for about 10 more minutes. The time is absolutely flown by. James is a journalist and author. If you're hearing him for the first time, it is possible because your podcast and the listeners to this program, the numbers have grown exponentially since March last year. You know this, I know this. People are looking for an alternative explanation to what's been happening. And thank God they're finding the Delling Pod. Whoever provides you with your podcast, you will get the Delling Pod there. Do check it out if you haven't before. If you do, you know all about it. It's good journalism. James has written some excellent books as well. Climate Change, Anything You Care to Think Of. Wrote for the broadsheets for many years. Good to have him on the programme. You put that beautifully, very succinctly. What it means to be, you know, intelligent, aware, open-minded, and still to have that pressure come on you to have the vaccine. And you mentioned there BBC News 24. I've never had too much of a day now in the sun when it comes to revelations, James. I've never, you know, blown anybody's mind with a revelation. But something did occur to me a few years ago, and I have been working on it ever since. And it was a bit of a kind of a mind bender for people. I have a theory, and I've written about this and broadcast about it, that 24-hour-a-day news channels were intended to replace the daytime soaps on people's televisions. And they were intended to be placed into bars and restaurants and gyms and waiting rooms and everything else you can think of to be running in the background all the time. And you don't even have to be paying attention. Like, your mum wouldn't even necessarily have to be listening intently to an interview or to a broadcast. But I believe they were put there, these 24-hour-a-day programmes, to seep into people's minds, to kind of programme people with the agenda. To replace the daytime soaps. If you go into anybody's house, James, I challenge you now, you're not supposed to in lockdown, but I know you don't care. Go to a friend's house. Guaranteed, it'll be on silent, but they'll have a 24-hour news channel on constantly, either on the telly or on the computer. And I believe that's got a lot to do with where we are. But I could be talking bollocks, which is fairly common.
No. I think if one wanted to go down that particular rabbit hole, you would find so much evidence. I'll give you another example of what you're talking about. I've always quite liked my iPhone, just because I've bought into the propaganda that Apple software is better designed for idiots like myself. And I've never tried a different type of phone, so I don't know whether this is true or not. But the last iPhone I bought, It came with this app thing that you couldn't switch off, where like the news comes up, but it's not real news. It's the fake news that Apple and the BBC and they're all kind of establishment mainstream media lie organizations. And I suppose most people imagine that this is real news rather than propaganda.
We
are undoubtedly being played. I mean, you think, for example, that the Trilateral Commission, which is the organization ultimately responsible for this globalist takeover,
another round table group, another Rockefeller round table group.
Exactly. You think that goes back to the early 1970s.
Yeah.
And you know what the Taliban used to say? They used to say to the soldiers who went to fight them in Afghanistan, they used to say, "You've got the watches, we've got the time." And I sometimes feel that way about the globalist elite, that they look at us and say, you know, we've got all the time in the world to turn you cattle into our slaves. You mean nothing to us, you know, and if it won't be my generation, then it'll be the following generation or the one after that. But it'll happen inevitably because you people are too stupid and easily led, and you deserve what's coming to you.
Brilliant
and
point, James.
In a
brilliant
way
point.
They're being vindicated right now, aren't they? I mean,
brilliant.
So many people aren't waking up.
That's fantastic what you said there. I've talked to people, friends now, and in a very kind of relaxed and lucid way about the agenda, and they've often said to me, "Ah, Richie, but sure, the guys behind it or the women behind it, whoever, they won't be around. What's the benefit to them?" You've answered that brilliantly. I've got to tell you, I don't know if you've seen this, Twitter has gone mad because of this argument with Meghan Markle, or the coverage of the Meghan Markle interview. Piers Morgan has left Good Morning Britain, has just been announced. That's an interesting story now. I don't know what you make of that.
Well, do you know what? I've been quite high-minded about the whole Meghan story because it is basically gaslighting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit like in as if in Nazi Germany, everyone has suddenly gone, "Oh, look at what is happening to Wallis Simpson and Zdzuka Windsor."
Yeah.
Did you hear what they said the other day? You know, meanwhile, you've got the concentration camps, but never mind the concentration camps. Never mind this world war going on. There's a bit of gossip. And in the same way, with the whole of the media right now is gaslighting us into pretending that what is happening is not happening, that somehow everything we're experiencing now is normal. And it's not normal. We need to wake up, people. I'm amazed that it has to be me to say this. I thought everyone would be saying this.
Yeah.
Why is it just you and me and a few others?
It's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, when I left the mainstream media, well, my last gig was with Talk Radio Europe in Spain, a semi-successful commercial radio station there. And the owner was a lovely guy called Martin Nason. Martin is Jewish. And he was great, Martin. I did a show in the evenings where I interviewed everybody from David Icke to Jim Mars, who's dead now. What a journalist Jim Mars was, the Texan. I'd have Alex Jones on from time to time. And, you know, I would have some academics who maybe had lost their tenure because they were talking about these things. That's how far back it goes for me. I wasn't doing anything special. I was just listening to these people. But I do have these moments now where I do wake up in the middle of the night and I think, my God, you know, 10 years ago, a guy who was called absolutely Bark Raven, you know, Stark Raven Matt, was saying that this type of thing was going to happen. And yet here we are. I'm so glad, to be honest, that somebody who achieved, I mean, you went, you know, much further up the ladder than I did. You know, you had your books published, you wrote for The Telegraph. To me, it's always very heartening when somebody who, you know, trod those corridors is talking about this stuff. I think it's fantastic, James. I just hope that there will be more like you. You know, I know Sue Cook from the BBC, Sue's been talking about things. We need more of your ilk, my friend. You know, somebody who has been in those places, who's done those TV programmes, because I think maybe people will be more inclined to listen to you than they will to, not so much to me, because I'm not a commentator or an analyst. I'm just a broadcaster. I'm an interviewer. I hope more like you come out, my friend. You know, I really do. I don't know if it's going to happen, but it needs to happen quick, James.
It does. It's getting a bit lonely, isn't it, where we are? And it's an awful responsibility in a way. I mean, I do feel like sometimes like the captain in a hornblower novel. quietly pacing the quarterdeck, yeah. sort of not letting anyone see that his fear. And you know, when the first cannon volley comes across the ship, you know, you've got to kind of stand up and not flinch, because I could do with a few more officers to so I'd share the burden.
It's funny, I mean, we have the platforms. I never do because I've been in the business too long to brag, but this program we're on now, it reaches numbers that were unthinkable for an independent operator some years ago. I mean, we've got 5 million unique listeners a week through listening live, and I can show those numbers to anybody.
That sounds a lot.
It's massive. That sounds it's a huge. Lot. Well, people need only go to podomatic.com to see the podcast download numbers. They're ridiculous. They're off the charts for this show. But it's still not enough, though, you know, because I still feel that it's people tuning in who are already open to the possibility that what you've been telling me is true. And that's just a drop in the ocean. We need to reach far more people than those numbers, you know. But I don't know if we are going to do that.
Here's the thing, Richie. A couple of years ago, I went to an exhibition at, I think it was at the Royal Academy. Do you remember that, when we used to go to art exhibitions and
things? Yeah, back in the day.
we could move around. We'd go on the train without being challenged for not wearing a mask, or beaten up, as one of my followers was the other day. It actually, you know, he had his kneecap smashed in Scotland because he wasn't wearing a mask, and some self-righteous tosser thought he'd have a go.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went to this exhibition, and it was about Soviet art, and it was about the Russian Revolution. And one of the, you know this, of course, as an old red.
Yeah, an old red, yeah.
That an incredibly small, the Russian Revolution involved an incredibly small number of people. The Bolsheviks were really not very large in number.
No.
That revolutions can happen with a small number of people. You don't expect, the masses will always be sort of neutral, you know, they're easily led by the small minority, the small determined minority. And obviously in the case of the Russian Revolution, that was a bad thing, but I think that we happy few we could yet win this one. We've just got to be determined and not lose faith. I mean, I tell you what really, really pisses me off, Richie. The things that the people, I have very limited tolerance for these people. People on our side of the argument who say, yeah, but you know, it's inevitable. We're going to have the vaccine passports because reasons. And I'm thinking, who are you, you tosser, to pronounce ex cathedra that we are going to get vaccine passports? You
I'm don't guilty now. I'm and guilty, I'm by the way. I'm guilty. Mea culpa. Well, look, I've been doing this a long time. By the way, I told you a whopper of a lie there a moment ago. It isn't 5 million a week. We reach 5 million unique listeners through the live stream and through the podcast a month, not a week. But that's global. That's all over the world. But I've been doing it a long time. It's not weekly. I wish it was weekly. But it's still a decent number, and it's monthly. Look, I've been guilty of doing the same thing. I have. I've said it on this programme. I've said once or twice, Jesus, we're knackered. But I hope I'm wrong.
Don't do it. I mean, actually, wash your mouth up. Because what you do, you enable the enemy. Do you not think the government is not relying on people like you to say, well, you know, so many people are, I would say it's probably the main reason that people are getting this experimental stuff injected in themselves. They've got their reservations. They know that it doesn't really protect you. And yet they think, well, yeah, but I want to go to Ibiza or Tenerife. Their motivation is as shallow as that, because they think already there are these vaccine passports, and there are not. And you think about this. You think about countries like America. There are countries like France, which are very resistant to the vaccine, because the French are bloody... I hate to use that word vaccine when it's not. The jab. The French are bloody minded. The resistance is strong in the Netherlands. It's strong in parts of Germany. So don't surrender the pass. You've got to keep fighting. Keep to make the vaccine passport system unworkable, because ultimately, you know, their goal is to essentially introduce a Chinese style social credit system. It's not about the vaccine at all. It's not about health. It's about control.
It never was. That's a brilliant place to leave it, that note of optimism there, James. Yes. Folks, do check James out. I know you know who James is. Some of you may not. The Delling Pod is an established and brilliant podcast produced and edited and introduced by James Dellingpole. Check it out on your podcast provider, or go to YouTube if you can't do that. And follow him on Twitter as well. If you put James Dellingpole into Twitter, if you search for it in Twitter, you'll just get James. Follow him there. And he's taken the fight to the establishment on social media and in his broadcasts pretty much all the time. I love having you on, mate. It's only the second time, but it's been a blast. It's been very positive, and whenever you feel like coming back, just drop me a line.
I'll be back, as they say.
Fantastic, James. Yeah. Have a lovely evening. Best to your family, and thanks for doing what you do. Right. Cheers, James. Bye for now. James Dellingpole, then. Thanks to him. That's it for the programme. Going to wrap it up right now. As my screen just died there. Let me just get rid of that. Yeah, it did a little bit. It did a little bit. Lovely to hear from James Dellingpole. The Delling Pod, D-E-L-I-N-G-P-O-D. That's how you find it, the Delling Pod. Right. I've got an old friend of mine coming back on this programme tomorrow. She is a doctor, an MD, a GP, the genuine article. And she's not been on this programme for more than a year. There's no good reason for that. It's just the way things work out sometimes. Dr. Rima Labo will be among the guests on the programme tomorrow. Dr. Rima Labo coming back with me for the first time in more than a year. Yeah, when I sometimes say we're screwed, aren't we? It's more tongue-in-cheek, really. You know, I don't know whether we are or whether we're not. I'm prepared to do as much as I can to tap people on the shoulder and to say, hey, listen, people, you know, there is another explanation to the things that are going on than the one you're given by the BBC. I'm prepared to keep doing that. I'm not giving up either, you know. But there are days when you think, wow, you know. It's like one step forward, two steps back. But look, we'll keep the positive side out for the foreseeable future, for as long as we can, anywho. Again, thanks to James. Enjoy chatting with him today. So I did. I did mention Rima Labo, didn't I? I did do that. That's another Richie Allen radio show in the can. Then the programme was produced, edited and introduced by myself, Richie Allen. It's all me and nobody else but me. Back with you tomorrow at 5. If you missed any of that, do check out the programme on Podomatic, iTunes, Spotify. It streams round the clock on richieallen.co.uk and on the TuneIn app as well. It's also on triggerwarning.tv. Thanks to Paul Ripley for his help, as always. See you tomorrow. Bye from me. Bye now. Don't